I better turn it on. House will come to order. Flag salute will be led by Representative Cannon. Oh, Cannon's here.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Representative Cameron, for my errors. Please remain standing. Opening ceremony will be presented by Grant Smith from Heppner, a guest of Representative Greg Smith.
Good morning. Ladies and gentlemen of the audience, esteemed representatives, it is a great honor to offer the invocation this morning. I'm humbled before you as I stand to give a word of prayer. Today is a unique time in Oregon's history, a time when a select few will shape the history for years and decades to come. The select few reside here in this very room. Over 3.5 million people have placed their trust in the hands of the 60 men and women who stand before me. Now is a time when sacrifice must replace selfishness, where kindness must replace malice, where teamwork will overcome division, and wisdom will conquer ignorance. Wisdom is a particularly important attribute. Wisdom is an obtained or acquired attribute. It can come from age or experience, but it can also come from elsewhere. James 1:5 reads, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven by the wind and tossed." Honored representatives, I ask you now to ask for the wisdom of the Lord. Look to him for guidance, nothing wavering, to show the same faith in him as the people of Oregon are showing in you. If we do not, our proud state will be as the waves of the sea, driven and tossed. Now prepare yourselves to pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we bow our heads before you on this day to ask for wisdom and guidance to be with our representatives, that they may be blessed by thee and have thy hand in their lives, that they may run and guide the state with thy will, as thy will would ask of them. Dear Heavenly Father, please bless each and every one of us, that we may be able to be comforted as we need, and that we may turn to thee and have thee in our lives. And dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful to live in Oregon in this time, and we're thankful for all the many things that thou has done for us, and we ask that thou will continue to bless us. And I say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Courtesies. Representative Greg Smith.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's with great pleasure that I introduce my oldest son, Grant, here on the side aisle. What a proud father I am. Grant will soon be a graduate of Heppner High School, where he'll be graduating with honors and heading off to Brigham Young University. Grant is a member of the National Honor Society, where he was elected by his peers as vice president. He's an Eagle Scout. He serves as a primary teacher in our church for children aged 3 to 5 years old, including our youngest daughter, Genevieve, who is in his primary class. He's also an accomplished wrestler, where in February, Oregon Live ranked Grant as the 8th best wrestler in the state. But I have to tell you, with all that said, there's two things that make me most proud of my son. One is that my son knows how to work. And among all of his accomplishments, he holds down the job as a waiter in a restaurant. And there's nothing like having your son come home and share with you the money he earned from his tips. Second is the fact that my son shared with me a very, very valuable piece of wisdom back in December as I was preparing to come down to Salem. And I'd like to share that with you. I was struggling with how to manage my office this session, knowing that Republicans served in a significant minority. And I shared with him the thought that at some point I had to figure out how to serve my district. And he offered a piece of guidance that has stuck with me and has served as a valuable tool for me this session. And he said, Dad, what you need to remember is you need to stand by your convictions without denigrating others. And I'll tell you what, that hit me like a ton of bricks, and that has been the motto in our office this session. Colleagues, will you please welcome my oldest son, Grant Smith, to the Capitol today.
Further courtesies, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, come on forward. If you'll direct your attention, you'll find a very familiar face, Jake Garrow, who was a page here for my first three sessions, where I'm happy to welcome him back, and his friend, Kelly Bass, who's a constituent. She's back from Washington, D.C. for the summer. She goes to school in California, and I just wanted you to welcome and say hello to him today.
Further courtesies, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I'd like to have us all extend courtesies to some students up in the upper rear gallery. If you could stand, wave, yeah. They're all from either C.S. Lewis Academy in Newburgh or from St. Paul Lutheran in Sherwood. And they're here visiting the Capitol today, and they're fourth and fifth graders. And just give them a big, big hello.
Further courtesies? Seeing none. Oh, that's right. We have a moment in history, and it turned out that today was my day, so I get to do it from here. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by James Walker, a retired physician, a 31-year resident of Eugene, and a longtime collector of pre- and post-exploration maps of North America and the Pacific Northwest. It has to do with Bruno Hacita. Bruno D. Hacita, and I'm not going to try his last name because I know I'll murder it, a Spanish naval officer commanded an expedition in March of 1775. His mission was to explore and extend the Spanish territories to the Pacific Northwest. On August 17, 1775, Hacita became the first to map and record a written description of the entrance to the Columbia River. A large bay that he had named Baja de la Ascension, Hacita's map names Cava de San Roque, which corresponds to today's Cape Disappointment, and Cabo Frondoso, which corresponds with Point Adams or Tillamook Head, Hacita wrote, "These currents and the seething waters lead me to believe that the bay may be the mouth of some great river or some passage to another sea. Unable to enter the bay because the crew was suffering from scurvy, the expedition returned to San Blas, Mexico. Six journals of the expedition, including Hacita's, were sent to Madrid, although the Spanish policy of secrecy prevented publication of Hacita's discovery. Hacita had a distinguished military career, but he never returned to the Pacific Northwest." I'm going to change this because on the coast there's two pronunciations of Hecata Head or Hacita Banks are named after him. Thank you. Further courtesies. Verification of quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Cannon is here. Representative Wingert. Representative Wingard. And excuse for business, Representative Buckley, Representative Jensen, Representative Hunt, Representative David Edwards, Representative Galizio, and Representative Richardson. And Representative Wingert is here. And Representative Hunt is excused for business. Quorum is present. Messages from the Governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Governor to inform you that it is approved and signed the following bills: House Bills 2039, 2041, 2050, 2062, 2109, 2111, 2198, 2203, 2211, 2212, 2213, 2234, 2362, 2521, 2704, 2826, 2871, and 3055.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bill 773, House Bill 2011, 2108, 2153, 2155, 2156, 2219, 2262, 2272, 2276, 2277, 2318, 2394, 2621, 2738, 2755, adopted H.J.R. 35, 40, and 43.
First readings, memorials, and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 2163 and repass the bill.
Representative Barker moves the House concur in Senate amendments to House Bill 2163 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill has been improved over in the Senate. It allows a little bit longer time for a member of the armed forces to take up an appeal if there's a wrongdoing, and allows them to go directly to the Supreme Court, petition the Supreme Court for state review within 35 days after the date of a decision in a manner approved by rules of the Supreme Court. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those of the opinion the House concur in Senate amendments to House Bill 2163 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes yes. House Bill 2163, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2613 and repass the bill.
Representative Holvey moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2613 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill originated from the House Consumer Protection Committee with a unanimous vote, was sent out of this chamber with unanimous vote to the other side, where it received a unanimous vote with an amendment that appears to be somewhat innocuous and looks good to me, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holder, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the House concur in Senate amendments to House Bill 2613 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. House Bill 2613, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. First reading of House Bills. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 3489, relating to fish hatcheries and declaring an emergency.
Bills read the second time are passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 104, relating to fee schedule for a federal operating permit program and declaring an emergency, removes requirement that Environmental Quality Commission establish fee scheduled every 2 years for sources subject to federal operating permit program, declares emergency effective on passage.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 104. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Senate Bill 104, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill in short summary.
Senate Bill 204, relating to construction contractor bonding, revises construction contractor bonding and construction claim statute to clarify availability of residential and commercial contractor bonds for satisfaction of claims.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 204. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Representative David Edwards votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam votes aye. Senate Bill 204, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill in short summary.
Senate Bill 206, relating to persons regulated by the Construction Contractor Board, makes personal identifier information contained in license of certificate application to Construction Contractors Board confidential.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 206. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? He votes aye. Senate Bill 206, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House Bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2749, relating to amusement device taxes and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a 3/5 majority.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2749. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, since 1993, we have had in place what they call the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. What this is, it allows your youth to have jobs in the summertime. It is conducive specifically to the geographical areas of each and every one of our counties, Every one of us in this room has kids that work under this program. Most of them are at-risk youth. I've always used the example with these kids that I saw a advertisement one time, and it was about an oil filter. The individual held the oil filter up in the air and said, you can either pay me now by pointing at the oil filter, or you can pay me later, and pointed toward the floor to see an engine that was spread out all over the floor that had been dismantled. That's what this is about, preventative maintenance. These children come to us through schools, they come through us through community, and come through us through volunteers. How important is this program? Well, it affects every one of us and every one of our children in our counties, in our districts, in this room. Since 1993, we have had this attached to the amusement tax. And people ask, what's the nexus? Well, there is no nexus because the amusement tax has to do with the lottery. But the infinite wisdom of the legislature was that we have a dedicated funding source so we couldn't get into it. Makes sense. It is $10 per machine in the state of Oregon. We are asking an increase to $20 instead of $10. The limit is 6 machines per vendor, so it's a maximum of $60 per year. Oregon minimum wage has increased from $4.75 in 1993 to $8.40 in 2008. We do pay these children minimum wage. They go out, clear trails, clear brush. They go work on estuaries and do conservation-type projects. Based on the Consumer Price Index, you can figure just with inflation and with the average cost of, and the inflated part of our minimum wage that we've lost a lot of ground. I'm going to give you an example of that. In 1993, we paid out about $41,333 per county. Today, we are only able to go down to $17,500. That's due to inflation, and it's due to the fact that minimum wage has almost doubled. OICC has grown also in community school activity with your at-risk schools in your counties. We have one in Jackson. We have one in Josephine. We have programs in every county in the summer. And I believe in Grant County or Sherman County or Wheeler County, one of those three, we were the highest employer of youth in that county in a summer. So that's how important this program is. A lot of people say, well, a tax is a tax, and I agree with that. I don't vote for taxes. I don't usually vote for fees. But it's our youth. It's your children. It's your at-risk children. We have a choice here. We can either support them or elect not to. Personally, I think for $60 for a vendor, $10 per machine that they have access to, I don't think that's asking too much for them. And the lottery is gaining, agreed, it is gaining in money, up $7 million. I don't think that's asking too much to put in the future of our kids. I ask your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I'm pretty familiar with the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. Fabulous program. One that does good things as well as as well as changes lives. And certainly like to support that. On the other hand, this has to do with lottery funds. And I know I keep saying this, but I think maybe we need to talk about our own addictions. As was explained in the Ways and Means Subcommittee when we were talking about gambling addiction and the problem in this state, approximately 76,000 people, 76,000 Oregonians are addicted to gambling. About 70% of that, that would be about 53,000 individuals, are addicted to state-operated video poker. 53,000 people. I think it's wrong. I appreciate the co-chair's effort to better fund gambling addiction treatment, but I think the cause is fundamentally wrong. Years ago, I thought it was inappropriate to expand it to video poker and did vote against that. Today, I'll be voting against this bill for that reason. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just wanted to speak briefly as somebody who has been involved with the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. Growing up here in Oregon, I worked for several years for a project that was very closely aligned with the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps and was able to experience firsthand the value of these kinds of programs to youth in Oregon. There is no substitute for getting people out in the woods, into their community, working hard, seeing the value of a good day's work, earning a paycheck, learning how to be a good employee. And that is something that benefits us in the long run. I think this is a good bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, first of all, this is a good program that does a wonderful job for the students that it serves. But I rise today in opposition to this bill, not because I want to stop what they are currently doing, but I want them to change the way that they practice and change the way that they recruit their students before we give them additional resources. In the information that was provided to us in the Revenue Committee in their annual report, we learned that there is a significant problem with gender equity in these programs. Only 29% of the students served in the Community Stewardship Corps are girls. I asked questions about this issue, was very concerned that this problem did not seem to be on the radar of the administrator of the program. I'm grateful that since that time, he has put out some information to try to learn more from the local programs, how they're recruiting girls and what their individual numbers are. It is true that in some parts of the state, there are more girls than boys, but when you add them all together, overall, only 29% in the Community Stewardship Corps are girls. Colleagues, we have many troubled young girls in the state of Oregon who could benefit from these jobs, who could benefit from these programs. We have an obligation to serve these troubled young girls. If we do not take the time to start stepping up to the issue of gender inequity and holding programs accountable when they don't meet those goals, we are never going to solve the problem. I think there are a lot of people who would say in 2009, we've broken the glass ceiling, we're past that problem. Colleagues, I would urge you to look around this chamber. There are 60 members of us. Only 15 of us are women. All of us can fit in the good representative from Milwaukee's office in a meeting before a session with room left over for some of you. That is a significant problem. We need to be doing everything that we can to serve the boys and the girls of this state. And when we see a problem as glaring as this one, it is time to say no. We are not going to reward you with more money and a program expansion until you are addressing this issue of gender inequity. Colleagues, I urge you to vote no and send a very strong message that we value our boys and our girls, and that we will not be approving increases in spending in programs until we see that similar commitment from those same programs. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, to the bill. This bill is important to both boys and girls in our state. Your watershed councils often have lots of streamside and restoration work to do, and these kids are the bulk of the workforce that do these projects. They get good experience in teamwork. They get a good experience working outside with their hands. They learn what trees and streams and fish are, and they learn to be a responsible citizen. I think the representative from Corvallis has a very good point, and we should work toward getting more girls involved. But I urge your aye vote today. This is a great program. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to respond very briefly to the comments from the member from southwestern Clackamas County about the nature of this tax. This is a privilege tax on those who operate these devices. It increases the tax by $10 a year, from $10 to $20 a year. And it would raise about $123,000, and that's the amount we're talking about. It's on the machines. It's not on the actual operation of the machines. The representative from the upper left coast made the rest of my speech, so I won't make it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I just rise with a couple of comments. I respect what the representative from Corvallis and Philomath has had to say about this bill, and I share her concerns. I also have concerns that these dollars that go into the OYCC are shared with other programs that treat other portions of our youth population and other conservation programs that really do deliver great service as well. And I do have concerns about the administrative costs of this particular administration of these programs and the staffing levels per student and how much time they actually have people out in the field compared to some of the other programs that they do participate with but don't necessarily have any say-so whether those programs get any money. I would like to see this money distributed more equitably throughout other programs in this state. But having said that, that can't happen if they don't have the money to do it, and I will be supporting this bill. And I hope that the board and my friends that are on the board will take a look at how these monies are actually delivered and how they actually do serve our youth populations. But I hope that they continue to do a good job. These are good programs, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, I rise today in support of OYCC. However, I haven't heard anybody rise today in support of small businesses. And as one that has worked on the OLCC budget, I have found and been disturbed by the fact that small business people that host these video lottery machines' commissions have been cut consistently. So they're making less money. And I don't see a single member standing up, pulling out their checkbook, saying, I support OYCC, and that's why I am writing a check to them today. We're supporting OYCC, and we're supporting small business people writing the check to support OYCC. So I'm a no vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier?
Question to the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
The carrier does.
He does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the good representative from Medford. As we just discussed on the floor, in ways and means, we authorized, I believe it was expenditure limitation for $6 million in federal stimulus money to come to the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. And several of us in committee discussed whether or not that money would be contracted out, or at least a significant portion of that, so that other community-based organizations that run similar programs around the state might have access to those federal dollars. And we were assured that a significant portion of that money would be available competitively to other community-based organizations. Could you let me know if that has actually happened at this point?
Thank you for the question, good representative. The truth of the matter is, and I'm going to use an example of a organization that I know of in the Lane County area. They were guaranteed about $100,000, and they ended up receiving about $150,000. I think the question here is maybe we don't fully understand what OYCC does. OYCC is just a clearinghouse. It goes out, it allows programs to be administered by local people, by your counties, by your districts, and they more or less send that money out and do grants. Example, Senator Prozanski and I did the grants for the state of Oregon last year. We had two full boxes of grant applications, and we recommended a grant in each one of those counties, and that is the purpose of what we do. OYCC is not the administer, we are the administer of it, but only the grant part of it. The local municipalities, counties have their own programs. Example, mine's the Job Corps down in Southern Oregon. Josephine County's is also the Job Corps. You have different entities that administer these programs, handle the youth, handle the leaders, the team leaders, and what we do is just oversee that and do the grant part of it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I appreciate the good representative response from Medford. The and I'm not, you know, this bill came up, and I hadn't had the chance to research it as thoroughly as I would have liked to, but I do remember the discussion clearly in Ways and Means that those funds would be contracted out. And I just talked to the director, after I talked to the good representative, I talked to the director of a youth organization in my district, the Youth Employment Institute, and they are unaware of any RFPs that have been put out, and they would usually be in the loop for that. Now, I could just have the wrong information, but I think what I'm intending to do at this point is to vote no on this, to send a message that the promise that was made to us in Ways and Means should be kept in the future if it hasn't been kept by now. And as more information comes to me, if this bill goes down, I would gladly reconsider my vote on reconsideration tomorrow. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel. Hold that. Representative Gelser. Since this is your second time to speak.
It's a conflict of interest.
Conflict of interest.
Yes. I rise to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Representative Gelser, please state your conflict.
I and my family have significant investment in companies that may make amusement devices that would be subject to this tax.
So noted for the record. Since there is no one else in the queue, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Thank you.
A couple things have been brought up here. One is about the small business people in the lottery, about how they are maybe squeezed. You know, folks, a good friend of mine has lottery machines, makes very good money on it. In fact, like I stated earlier, the lottery is up about $7 million of where we thought it would be. As for the member from District 59, my colleague, bring your checkbook out. I'd be glad to accept that check. We would always take donations toward this cause. The question is arose about gender. Well, you know, at-risk people, there is no gender criteria. We don't have a quota. We have people that are at risk. If that's a woman or a man or a young woman or a young man, it's still at risk. This program is open for people to step up to the plate at any time and be involved in it. All they have to do is volunteer and ask about it. They're never turned away. This is up to your local communities again. The criteria is open and ready for each and every one of them to succeed. And it does make changes in people's lives, And that's exactly what we're doing. We're changing people's lives. I urge your aye vote.
Those of you of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes no. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Chris Edwards votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Representative Barton votes no. Representative Nolan, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Serve notice of possible reconsideration. Having voted with the apparent prevailing side.
Representative Nolan, having voted with the prevailing side, serves notice of possible reconsideration. House Bill 2749, having failed to receive the constitutional majority, has failed to pass. That is a 3/5 majority required on that bill. Therefore, it's failed to receive the constitutional majority and has not passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2145, relating to state agency administrative services and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2145A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill comes to you from your Rules Committee with a unanimous vote, and it took a long time to get there. This is a reorganization of understanding how and working with DAS on our IT systems. And it really corresponds to what we did with 2500. It is the beginning of getting an architecture that is the same across all of the agencies, and it includes their discussions about how the policies that they'll develop to buy new software and new equipment so interagency communication can take place. It's a good bill, should pass. I encourage your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Kennemer, how do you vote? Kennemer votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. House Bill 2145A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2345, relating to impaired health professionals and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2345B. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2345 removes existing impaired health professional programs from their respective licensing boards and directs the Department of Human Services to establish or contract to establish an impaired health professional program. Further, it directs the Department of Human Services to contract with an independent third party to establish a monitoring entity for impaired professionals. It does not require that a health licensing board have an impaired health professional program, but it does prohibit a health licensing board from establishing an alternative impaired health professional program. House Bill 2345 will permit health licensing boards to focus on their primary mission, which is to protect public health and safety, and I strongly urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill?
To the bill, please. First of all, I want to acknowledge the extraordinary contribution that the representative from Josephine County made on this bill, working very hard. I also want to acknowledge the two other staffers from my office, Mr. Powers and Mr. Burns, working on this. This was a complicated bill. It was a long journey. We had the governor's staff involved, several boards, several of the associations, and the journey was a difficult one, but it was worth the result. I think we do have a much better plan with this bill for dealing with impaired professionals and for making sure both their rights are protected and their ability to get back to work is protected. At the same time, the safety of the public is protected. And I, too, join with the good representative for Josephine County and urge a yes vote on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2345B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2511, relating to electronic voting system and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2511A. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you House Bill 2511A from your House Rules Committee with unanimous aye vote. This bill allows ballots from overseas military personnel and Americans living overseas to cast ballots using a fax machine, assuring that military personnel deployed have the opportunity to vote and that their ballots are counted is an important issue for me. This is really a problem, colleagues. The Associated Press, in a news article May 13th, reported that one out of every four ballots, one out of four, requested by military personnel and other Americans living overseas for the 2008 election may have gone uncounted. According to findings released at the May 12th U.S. Senate hearing, and Senator Charles Schumer, the Democrat from New York, who's chairman of the Senate Rules and Administration Committee, said the study, while providing only a snapshot of voting patterns, is enough to show that the balloting process for service members is clearly in need of an overhaul. And although Oregon's record is much better, we must work to be sure that every vote by deployed military personnel's ballots are counted. 19 other states allow fax voting as a way to increase turnout for voters who have to overcome greater obstacles and shorter timelines to get their ballots in. House Bill 2511A will allow election officials to compare the signatures on a fax with the signatures on a voter registration card to verify a voter's identity and creates an exception to the law that only an original signature can be used for verification. The person also using this process will have to waive the right to a secret ballot. The bill directs the Secretary of State to adopt rules to implement the policy. I want to thank the Rules Chair and committee members for their support and assistance with this bill. And a special thanks to Secretary of State Kate Brown and her staff for their cooperation and can-do attitude to structure this policy with the goal of counting every vote by our military members overseas. The Secretary provided you a letter on your desk of support for the bill. It's very appropriate, colleagues, that we have the opportunity to vote for this bill today to help our military on the eve of Memorial Day weekend, which is dedicated in memory of those brave men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice for our nation, our freedoms, and the right to vote. I encourage your yes vote on House Bill 2511 as amended.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Tomei votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2511A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2518, related to government ethics and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2518A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring you a little bill that I drafted a long time ago, and it took a long time to get here, and it kind of finishes up the work that we had done on Senate Bill 30 with the ethics bill. This bill originated, and it continues to have, a section that that allows the exemption as a gift for teachers and other employees of school districts to take trips with their kids to Washington, D.C. or to overseas. And it also does a couple of other things. Now, it became the omnibus bill. It removes the reference of domestic partners through this whole chapter, and that's to be consistent with all the other legislation that we write that says that you don't need to be redundant in something that has already been done in another law. So we do that. It also does something that we thought we did in 30, and that is takes out the requirement to file the quarterlies this year. If you look at 30, you'll find that as you read it, that it actually put the requirements of quarterlies into the final document that we will do for next year, but it left out the fact that we shouldn't file them this year if we're going to be redundantly putting them into the form next year. So it takes the quarterlies out for this year, which I think is a really good help in the system. And let's see, what's the other part here? And it also increases the failure to file the SEI, the fines for those. So, repeals them, I'm sorry. We had a statute that actually allowed the power of the commission to remove a person from the ballot if they hadn't filed the form. We didn't think that was the appropriate form for them to do that. It's more appropriate that other people take action in that case, not the ethics board. So that's pretty much the whole bill. I won't go through the section-by-section portion of it unless people have questions, but from my perspective, having worked it through rules and had that unanimous vote there, our goal was to finally put this chapter of this year to bed with this particular bill. I urge your eye support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Representative Garrett. Off the floor. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes aye. House Bill 2518A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3139, related to state agency internal audits.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3139A. Representative Nolan.
Could we do this a few minutes from now, Mr. Speaker? My apologies, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3139 is a bill that improves the accountability of state government by requiring internal audit functions to provide effective and comprehensive risk assessments for agencies that they represent and audit. We bring national standards to this approach, And it is a way that we can demonstrate not only to ourselves but to the public the effectiveness of program management and oversight. It comes to you with a unanimous vote out of the Rules Committee after a lot of work in both Rules and Policy Committees, and I recommend it to you for concurrence, for approval.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close?
Oh, I better not, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bailey, how do you vote?
Aye.
Bailey votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. House Bill 3139A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3450, relating to carbon monoxide and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3450A. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you House Bill 3450. The Lofgren and Zander Memorial Act. This bill is named in honor of Parker, Caroline, Owen, and Sophie Lofgren and Kara Zander, all who died needlessly of accidental carbon monoxide poisoning. I want especially to thank Kari Rittenour and others from these families for sharing their stories. It is because of their dedication and hard work that we bring this measure forward. Specifically, House Bill 3450 establishes policies for installing carbon monoxide alarms in residences. It defines a carbon monoxide source. It requires existing rental properties with a carbon monoxide source to have an alarm in place beginning July 2010. It requires the state fire marshal to establish rules for installation of carbon monoxide alarms in existing homes, and it requires alarms to be placed in new construction or at the time of title transfer beginning in April 2011. According to the Centers for Disease Control, carbon monoxide poisoning is the leading cause of unintentional poisoning in the United States of America. Last year, the Oregon Poison Center recorded 291 carbon monoxide poisonings, including 4 deaths here in our own state. And carbon monoxide poisoning may be underreported because the symptoms, headaches, dizziness, nausea, shortness of breath, closely mimic flu and food poisoning. 19 states and many local jurisdictions already require carbon monoxide alarms in residences. Studies show a strong correlation between carbon monoxide ordinances and a reduced death rate from carbon monoxide poisoning. As early as 1992, the Consumer Product Safety Commission recommended installation of carbon monoxide detectors as a first line of defense against carbon monoxide poisoning. House Bill 3450 is a consensus bill. Many stakeholders, including a representative of the Lofgren family, fire and business officials, real estate and landlord tenant representatives, and legislators, worked hard to bring this bill to you today. Colleagues, no family should have to go through a tragedy like that of the Lofgren and Zander families. Carbon monoxide alarms are both reliable and cost-efficient. This bill comes unanimously from your Committee on House Rules and I urge your aye vote on House Bill 3450. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. I sat on the work group that crafted much of the language. Unfortunately, when it went to rules, I lost contact with it. And one of the concerns I had initially was it listed hospitals, long-term care facilities, and dorms in the language, and that language was going to be pulled out, which made sense, quite frankly, for a hospital, because a hospital, you have people awake on the wards 24/7. So you have people that are up and around. That makes sense. Long-term care facilities have 24/7 staff. But dorms, which is where we have thousands of youth in the state of Oregon, are not going to be protected under this legislation. And I said, I need that piece of language in there to protect the youth of Oregon, the universities, to be in there, and it's not. I will be a no vote specifically because of that and hope that the Senate can rectify that situation. Another question was about the cost. There's no fiscal on this. One of these devices costs between $25 and $50, and there are probably some more expensive ones. They're not terribly expensive individually, but those costs will be borne by either the landlord, which will probably ultimately pass this on to the tenant. So I will be voting no, only because we are leaving out a crucial piece, which are our university dorms.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
I'd like to join with my colleagues supporting this bill. And I can say that it's good business, especially for a landlord. We had a condo in Palm Springs, and the condo was set up with two units next to each other all along the way, with a garage attached to one of them. A person in one of the units committed suicide by automobile, raising carbon monoxide in the closed garage, and the carbon monoxide seeped into the next unit and killed somebody sleeping in the next unit. That not only was a human tragedy, but it was very, very expensive. There was a huge lawsuit that followed from it. The insurance rates went up for 5 years. It was a mess. So I urge you to vote for this, and as I say, not only for humanitarian and public health reasons, but it makes good, good business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Wingard.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Representative, my understanding of the reading of this bill and the definition of carbon monoxide source will mean that basically, with very few exceptions, every home in Oregon, every single family home in Oregon, will have to have a carbon monoxide detector installed. Is that correct?
I'll check with my staff. My understanding is that any newly constructed homes, that would be the case. Is that true? And also at the time of title transfer.
Representative Wingard, follow up. Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Yes, she does.
Thank you. So even though it may take a little while as homes resell and turn over, the aim of this bill is to require every single family homeowner in Oregon to purchase a carbon monoxide detector. Correct?
As I said before, it will be required on new homes and at the time of title as homes are sold to a new buyer.
Thank you. To the bill.
Representative Wingard, to the bill.
Colleagues, somewhere between $20 to $50 apiece for every home in the state. Obviously, a carbon monoxide death is a tragedy, but this is, if you do the math, a very large expense to layer on and to demand of the people of Oregon. What could that money have been spent on? What's the trade-off on the amount of money that we're requiring everybody to spend over the next few years to install these in their homes? This is one of the most significant mandates to come out of this body, layered on just individual Oregonians, and it's a heck of a tax. I would urge a no vote.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I stand here, particularly after hearing the comments from the good representative from Wilsonville, in support of this bill. Not only in support, but I testified in favor of this bill, and I stand strongly in support of this. And I want to say, somewhat offended that we might think that this is one of the most significant taxes on Oregonians come out of this legislation. In fact, that offends me deeply. What this is similar to what the legislative body did several years ago when we changed the way that we were going to require smoke detectors in a home. When we changed the modification of a smoke alarm to include the smoke alarms with a hush feature and a long life battery. Why? Because it was in the public's best interest to do that. Because it was about safety of those families, of Oregonians' families. How did we phase that in? At time of title transfer is what we did. That, I think, was reasonable. It was responsible, and it was a good way to phase long-life smoke detectors in, and I can tell you as a firefighter they've made a difference. Now, to this particular bill, I had initially heard that we had had a couple of administrators from the fire service that had said that we did not want to respond on false alarms. Well, I can tell you, I would rather respond on a false alarm of a carbon monoxide detector, and I have gone on a couple. During the wintertime, we had our worst storm ever. I responded in one particular case of a carbon monoxide alarm. We had everybody evacuate the house. Actually found the source to be the hot water heater. Another one was a chimney flue. But I'll tell you about a call that I particularly will never forget, and that is the one where we took three lifeless bodies out of a house, all children, but fortunately gave them a second chance at life. The good news is they're all doing fine today. The bad news is there wasn't an alarm detector that went off. What woke them up was the father vomiting. The cause of the source, wintertime, they had a generator in the garage. They had it so that it was going to go ahead and ventilate. However, the east wind had blown those fumes back into the house. So while we can talk about this might be a mandate on people, it is a reasonable approach to public safety. It is a nice, reasonable approach to phasing in something that's needed. And quite honestly, again, I'd rather respond on a false alarm on occasion than on lifeless bodies that could have definitely been prevented as a result of having these in the homes. And again, these become your nose at night, as I tell kids and I tell you. These accidents don't occur when we're on the floor and walking. In respect to the comment, I certainly do hope it gets fixed in the Senate for our dorms, and I do appreciate all the work that you did as a work group. But I want to remind you that these calls generate at 2 and 3 a.m. in the morning, 4 a.m. They're not during your normal day. So while you're sleeping at home safely and while the children of Oregon are sleeping safely, I certainly hope this body sees the need to protect them by passing this legislation today. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And
to the bill.
To the bill. I clearly can't add to the experience and passion of my good colleague from Gresham. But having been the other legislator on the work group, I do just want to let my colleagues know that, first of all, that this only applies to residences that are fueled or have appliances that emit carbon monoxide. And first of all, that it, again, as the carrier indicated, this is the result of consensus among a variety of stakeholders, including representatives of the Landlords Association, the home builders, et cetera. And I would say that the standards that are included in this bill, as well as the timeline for this bill's going into effect, are aligned with new standards in the home building standards, the national standards. And so We are in line, going to be in line with these national standards. This bill is going to save lives, and I urge you to support it.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
This is, again, another expense for a landlord and or a homeowner to transfer property. It has been said here on this floor that you could use this money for something else, and that's probably true, because what does it cost to bury someone? Is it $25 or a lot more than that? I think we need to think about that issue.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I think I'm the final person on the committee to speak on this bill. But I wanted to clarify something that a representative from Wilsonville asked a question of the representative from Milwaukee twice, and I just want to say what this says, what this bill does, is prohibits title transfer of a single-family dwelling or multifamily housing containing carbon monoxide source unless there are properly functioning carbon monoxide detectors at locations that provide detection for all sleeping areas. This means when you sell a house or an apartment building or whatever, it requires landlords in multifamily housing to maintain carbon monoxide detectors in the units and prohibits tampering with the installed detectors. It requires rental housing to have alarms in place by April 1st, 2011. This had no opposition. It worked. The work group worked very well together. Everybody came together on this, as we've heard throughout all this testimony. This is a prevention measure. This is like having a smoke alarm. As a matter of fact, these devices are sometimes both smoke and carbon monoxide detectors. So I think that you need to reread the bill if you have any questions, but that's what it does. It does not require every household in this state to maintain a detector. However, they should. It's only for safety. So please support this bill.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Friends, I sit on the Rules Committee and was prepared to vote no on this bill until I heard testimony from the family that's on this yellow sheet that was on your desk this morning. The saving of one life from carbon monoxide poisoning, or one child or one family, is well worth the cost that we are mandating in this regard. This is a good bill. Please vote yes.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. I was very interested in the arguments about the cost, so I have my laptop at my desk, went to Amazon, and found that one of these carbon monoxide detectors can be purchased for $18.85. Quick calculation, I have four kids. That would be $4.71 to ensure that each of my kids wakes up in the morning. As a mother, I'm very happy to make that investment. I can think of nothing else I'd rather spend my money on. I would imagine other Oregon mothers feel the same way. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I might, I'd like to ask a question of the representative from Gresham, please.
Question of the representative from Gresham. Does the representative from Gresham yield?
I do, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Thank you, Representative, and I appreciate your willingness to do this. Representative, in your capacity in public safety, have you ever responded to a carbon monoxide poisoning death at a home with an operating carbon monoxide detector?
Representative, thank you for that question. The answer to that question is no, I have not. When there's working detectors in a home, people tend to self-evacuate.
Thank you. Follow-up question?
Further questions? Does Representative Matthews yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Using that same line of questioning, would you have ever responded to an RV with an operating carbon monoxide testing device where there was a death?
No, I have not, and I appreciate your question again.
Thank you, Representative. To the bill.
Representative Hanna, to the bill.
Colleagues, once again, I mean, this is one of those bills. Yes, there's a cost to it. And the representative from Grants Pass has an incredibly important point. If this is good in homes, if it's good and is known to work in RVs and boats and all kinds of other places where these things are used, shouldn't it be good in the university system as well? So if his vote simply says no because we're not protecting all the people we should, fine. But if you've just heard you don't have a death when you have an operating detector, that's a tough one to overcome. Cost for safety that works, probably the right thing to do. Thank you.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
This is obviously not a partisan bill. But in analyzing what to do with this bill, once again, we have a confusion between what our heart says and what our mind says. It's a tragedy that four people a year die. It's a tragedy that more than four people a year die from falls in the shower. And so maybe we ought to mandate that we have bars on the wall of the shower so that we will stop the senseless deaths and injury that occurs from people that fall in a shower. And what about kids that get hit when they're on a swing or they're walking in front of a swing? We should have a bill that says that if you're going to be within 25 feet of a swing to protect the children, they should be mandated to have helmets on, because swings are inherently dangerous and children have died or had mental, you know, injuries because of it. What it really comes down to is, although we want to assure that people are safe, we cannot mandate safety in every instance. And when you have people that have been harmed, as this poor family, and my heart goes out to them, that they suffered deaths because of carbon monoxide poisoning, I am sorry that that happened. But for us to come back and say, we're going to require that any instance that we possibly can, where there could be a death from carbon monoxide poisoning, we will require by law that that be protected, is merely another expansion of the government trying to assure that we can make every situation safe. And we cannot do that. And while this family came in front of this committee and caused everyone on the committee to, because their heart goes out to the family, decide that they're going to do good with other people's money, it's just another instance where we pass a law saying somebody else is going to pay for this, but by golly, we think it's a good idea. So all of those that vote in favor of this tonight, when you go to bed, can go to bed knowing that you've done good with other people's money. But I believe that's not what government is for. Government is to protect families, to inform families, and to enable families to make wise decisions. And we have laws against those that cause negligent conditions to arise. But it's not a good bill if we're doing this merely because we think it's a good idea and it's going to save four lives a year. Why? Because there's 1,000 areas where more than four lives a year die as a result of things that occur. It's not government's position, in my opinion, to try and be a protector for any ill. And we should vote no on this bill, not because we don't care about the families, but because it's just another extension of us saying that we're going to do good with other people's money.
Seeing no further discussion among people who haven't spoken for a first time, we have one person in the queue for a second time, Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Subsection 2, carbon monoxide source means a heater, fireplace, appliance, or cooking source that uses coal, kerosene, petroleum products, wood, or other fuels that emit carbon monoxide as a byproduct of combustion. That's practically every home in Oregon. My objection is not to public places like where people would rent from an apartment or something like that. We are going into people's homes,
and demanding that they incur this expense. According to the Census Bureau, there are 1.6 million housing units in Oregon. At $20 a device, that's $32 million. This is a requirement that Oregonians spend $32 million, and I would submit, and I really appreciate the comments made by my good friend from Southern Oregon, if we can't find a way to save more than four lives with $32 million, we're pretty inept.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do. Thank you very much. Is a good representative from Grants Pass still here? And I just want to point out, Representative, that after April 2011, dorms that are newly constructed or reconstructed, altered or repaired at a level that requires a building permit would be required to install carbon monoxide alarms if they contain a carbon monoxide source. Existing dorms and would not fall under this legislation, but I think there is interest in the committee and on the other side to include dorms at a later time. So I just want to point out also, it's not only, although I certainly don't diminish that at all, four deaths in Oregon, as I said, there were reported 291 carbon monoxide poisonings in Oregon. There are 20,000 people sent to the emergency room in the United States from carbon monoxide poisoning. And there is often very serious damage, especially brain damage, for people who leave the ER after having carbon monoxide poisoning, brain damage that is lasting. And I appreciate the good representative from Klamath Falls who mentioned the family that had come to testify. After I heard that testimony in the committee, I called my husband immediately and asked him to buy a carbon monoxide alarm and put it on our home, which he did. If you hear that testimony, I think you would be very concerned about the safety of your own family. So again, I would encourage your aye vote on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote?
Aye.
Holvey votes aye. House Bill 3450A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. And colleagues, we're going to carry over the rest of the bills on today's calendar to Tuesday, so there will be several motions to that effect. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's third reading of House Bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, May 26, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the memorials and resolutions on today's third reading of final reading, memorials and resolutions calendar be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, May 26, 2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 773, relating to legal expense trust funds and declaring an emergency.
Bill read for the first time has passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5, relating to the Adjutant General. Senate Bill 10, relating to inter-county adoptions of children in custody of the Department of Human Services and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 46, relating to background checks for schools and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 102, relating to solid fuel burning devices. Senate Bill 103, relating to fees for air contamination sources and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 121, relating to requirements for school personnel and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 123, relating to child abuse records and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 124, relating to operating a new vehicle without driving privileges. Senate Bill 129, relating to commercial driver licenses and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 154, relating to senior prescription drug assistance program. Senate Bill 187, related to State Department of Agriculture refunding of payments. Senate Bill 195, related to wave energy and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 227, related to furnishing alcoholic beverages to a minor. Senate Bill 235 related to small estates. Senate Bill 269 related to relocation of utility facilities. Senate Bill 303 related to humane special agents. Senate Bill 371 related to trusts. Senate Bill 378 related to long-term care advisory committee and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 381 related to health benefit plans. Senate Bill 449 related to historic highways. Senate Bill 589 related to taxation of Indian tribal land and prescribing effective date. Senate Bill 610 related to approved transportation costs and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 646 related to budget levels for Type B area agencies. Senate Bill 660 relating to Oregon State Capital Foundation and appropriate money and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 687 related to lawyer trust accounts, appropriate money. Senate Bill 771 related to landlord-tenant law. Senate Bill 839 related to address confidentiality. Senate Bill 911 related to persons found guilty except for insanity. Senate Bill 915 related to regulation of structure. Senate Bill 928 related to unlawful employment practice involving victims of certain crimes.
Okay. Bills read for the second time were passed to the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, May 26, 2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Colleagues, if we could have a little attention, please. Thank you. Representative Berger.
Friends, I lost a constituent this morning, and he is a colleague of ours. His name is Winton J. Hunt. He passed away this morning at the age of 97 in his home. He served as a state representative from 1957 to 1962, representing Marion County, and then he served as chief clerk of this house from 1963 to 1982. Then went on for one session as special counsel to the House Republican office in 1973. I think it's important that we, just for a moment, remember those who have served before us. His services will be held next Friday at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. And I appreciate your just moment of thought for those that came before us. Thank you.
Thank you. Further announcements? Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, in a somewhat similar vein, a reminder that we are embarking on the Memorial Day weekend and that we should keep in our hearts the veterans for whom this holiday honors. We'll all be working in our districts on Monday, making sure we stay connected with our constituents. But I hope we keep in mind the veterans for whom this special weekend is named.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans, we will caucus. Please get your lunch and meet back in the caucus room. Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, thank you. Yesterday, we packed 410 love boxes for our troops. They're on their way to the soldiers that are from Oregon. Thanks to your efforts and many in this building, we raised over $4,300 from 87 individuals who contributed for the postage of those boxes. Donations from many places, Fred Meyer, Walmart, dental hygienists, Kraft Foods, neighborhood stores, and I don't even have the whole list, Nike. All kinds of people came together to make that possible yesterday. Today, we're still receiving donations for the postage as the love boxes for our troops continues even after yesterday as a statewide event here in this state. It is a day that we've done good things. And yesterday, we had World War II vets go through the line, some in wheelchairs, 103 years old, packing boxes, sending their blessings to those that are serving us still to this day. Thank you so much for doing just such a little thing that will bring a blessing to those as they open those.
Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is just an announcement that the Joint Transportation Committee will meet today at 1:30, not 1 o'clock.
Seeing no further announcements, remonstrances. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to share with the body the good news as published in the Portland Business Journal this morning that one of the giants of solar manufacturing is looking at Oregon as a future home. And highlight the fact that the company has specifically called out the good work we've been doing in this state as incentives relate and think about the good things that are possible as we continue our work to transform to a clean energy economy. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just two quick apologies. I want to apologize to the body for being the late one so often in voting. I am, I'm not diagnosed, but I am ADD, and I, what was I talking about? And I'm sorry that I don't vote on time, and I just want to make that apology. Another apology I want to make is if anyone took umbrage at my questions to my good friend from Gresham yesterday, if I cross the line, I apologize. I think the world of him, and one of the reasons I do is he's a freshman who looks for good ideas in any party. And I think we could learn a lot from him. And it reminds me of what our good friend, the nephew of the governor, said the other day when he introduced him, which was, you can get a heck of a lot more done if you don't care who gets the credit. There's good ideas in this chamber, and we need to look for them on both sides of the aisle. And I just hope we will as we go forward. I happened to see the governor, this is true, as he was leaving, not on this trip, but I think it must have been the day we started our session. And we were all, Representative Barker, I'm almost done. And we were all congratulating him and saying hello and thanks. And the other thing that Vic Attia said to me was, he looked me right in the eye and he said, get to work. Let's get to work. There's some good ideas in this chamber, and we don't need to spend our time trying to get credit. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission to return to announcements.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like request to suspend the rules to allow Representative Call to change his vote on House Bill 2749.
Representative Hanna requesting unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Call to change his vote on House Bill 2749. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Call, how do you vote?
I vote no.
Call votes no. Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Tuesday, May 26, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Tuesday, May 26, 2009. Without objection, have a great weekend. House adjourned.